Greetings and welcome back to TanakhStudy.com, the podcast program in which we study Parashat HaShavua over the course of six podcasts broadcast during the week in which that parasha is read. My name is Yitzhak Etshalom and I'm honored to be studying the second half of Sefer Shemot with you. We are now partway through Parashat Vayakhel, about to look at the first set of psukim in Perek Lamed Zayin. After we have in Perek Lamed Vav the description of all of the people bringing everything they need to bring, and then of Bezalel and his crew making the Mishkan, all the different covers, and the Krashim and the Adanim, and then the Parochet, with all of the covers and structural divisions, now we get to the Kor Kelim. In the previous podcast I mentioned a famous Midrash. That has to do with the name Bezalel. The Gemara in Masechet Brachot and brought in several other midrashic sources has an association with the name Bezalel, which seems to focus on the phrase that's used twice. Once in Perek Lamed Aleph, Ru'u Kara Adonai B'Shem, and then the same sort of phrase that shows up here in our parsha, that Bezalel was called by name, as if the name Bezalel is something special. And so the way the Gemara represents it, and it's really quite radical, is to say that Moshe told Bezalel essentially what we have in Parshat Truma: make an Aron, make a Shulchan, make a Menorah, and only after that make a Mishkan, make a Krashim, Adanim. And Bezalel says to Moshe in this Gemara, that wasn't the order in which you were instructed, because after all, Moshe, do you first build furniture and then build a house around it, or do you first build a house and then put the furniture in? And then the way he says it is very odd, because it doesn't really fit well with our parsha either, is all these kelim that you want me to build, where am I going to put them? So first I have to build the Mishkan and then put them in. The reason that's odd is several things. First of all, because it would imply that Bezalel did not even build the Kelim, like Aron, etc., until the Mishkan was built and constructed and up, and that's certainly not the case. What's happened so far is that Bezalel and his crew have built the woven the fabrics and put the skins and then the Krashim, but they're not up yet. They're just ready to go. That's the first thing that's odd. The second thing that's odd is that Bezalel in the Midrash then says, Shema kacha mar lecha. Maybe what Hashem really said was, first Mishkan and Krashim and then Aron and Kelim. And Moshe confirms it by saying, Ooh, Bezalel el hayita. You must have been in the shadow of God. In other words, it was like you were there. And you know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said? Which means that the order that's presented in Truma is, according to that Midrash, not the real order that it was given in. In other words, Hashem first said to Moshe, make a Mishkan and Krashim and Adanim, and then Aron and Shulchan and Menorah. Moshe subverted the language and presented Truma in a different order, and then Bezalel went to action in the sequential order that is the practical one that makes sense. The Midrash here is very difficult to fit in within Pshat for those two reasons that I mentioned. And yet it is a phenomenal notion, saying that essentially Moshe and Bezalel are looking at the Mishkan from two different vantage points. Moshe's vantage point is, if you will, from the top of the mountain, meaning looking at the goal, at the end purpose of the Mishkan. And from that perspective, the Aron is first, and then we move out to the Shulchan, the Menorah, and then the protection around it. Bezalel's perspective is a practical guide to building. And so therefore, from Bezalel's perspective, first you build the structure, and then you build the kelim to go into them. Neither perspective is inherently right or wrong. It's just a different perspective. It is true that in practicality, you need to build a housing before you have somewhere to put these kelim. But from a perspective of teleology, of the goal, of the purpose of everything, it's certainly the case that the Mishkan itself is not what's meaningful, it's what's housed in it. Just like the Aron itself isn't meaningful, except that the Aron houses the Luchot HaBrit, and thus it's called Aron HaIdut or Aron HaBrit. Okay. Perek Lamed Zayin Pasuk Aleph. Vayas Bezalel ta Aron Atzei Shittim. So, but Bezalel himself is the one who made the Aron Atzei Shittim. out of acacia wood. Amatai v'chetzi orkom, amachetzi rochpom, amachetzi komato, exactly as commanded, to the dimensions. Vayitzapel zahav tahor, mibayit umichutz. He plated it with pure gold, that's, we assume, 24 karat gold, on the inside and on the outside. So what essentially you have is, when you're looking at it, you're seeing gold. When you look on the inside, if anyone were to, with the luchot and perhaps Sefer Torah, machloket, are going to sit, it would be gold in there, and in the middle is wood. In between the two layers of gold is the wood base. And then he made a crown that goes around it as commanded. A very beautiful drasha about Mibayit Umichutz, that a Talmid Chacham, who is sort of the human embodiment of the Aron, has to be Tahor Mibayit Umichutz, meaning he can't be somebody who has a religious and enlightened and sensitive exterior, whereas inside he's really venal and of low character. He has to be tahor mibayit umichutz. And as a matter of fact, the first emphasis is his tahara has to be inside of him. And only then will the proper tahara on the outside make him a fitting housing for Torah. Vayitzoklo arba tamrot zahav. And then he put together the four gold rings, soldered them, al arba pamotav, on the four sides, four corners, ushtei tamrot al tzalo ha'echat, ushtei tamrot al tzalo ha'shinit. But he didn't set them up in corners, but rather two on each side. Vayas badei atzei shitim. And then he made staves of atzei shitim, vaytzafotam zahav, and he plated them with gold as well. Vayaveh tabadim batabaot. So he not only constructed it, but he also set it up. He put the staves into the rings, al tzalot aron, laseta taron. He put them in the sides of the aron in order to carry the aron. Now, by the way, at this point, the edut is not there. And so the aron is set up, ready to go, no top. And then, vayas kaporet zahav tahor. He made a kaporet of zahav tahor, pure gold. Amatai machetzi orkav, machetzi rochba. Again, the same dimensions, 1.5 amot square, as the aron has. The aron, of course, is higher than that. And then, vayas shnei kruvim zahav. He made two golden kruvim. Mikshar asautam, mishnei ksota kaporet. He made them from one solid piece of gold on both sides of the kaporet, on both edges. Kruvachad mikatsa mizeh, kruvachad mikatsa mizeh, one kruv on each side. Mina kaporet asata kruvim mishnei ksotav. And again, it's from the kaporet itself, he made the kruvim on both sides. Vayua kruvim porseich nafayim lamala. So the kruvim had their wings lifted up heavenwards. Sochachim b'chanfehem ala kaporet. They were covering, with their wings, they're covering over the kaporet. Ufnehem ish al achiv. And the kruvim's faces are facing each other. El kaporet yayu pnei kruvim. And yet their faces are towards the kaporet, which seems to indicate three different directions. One of them is that their wings are over the kaporet, which sounds like, since they're at both edges of the kaporet, that their wings are sort of going in a side direction. In the meantime, they're facing each other. Now, they could be on both sides of the kaporet, and then they're facing each other and their wings are over, but then the wings are not covering the kaporet, their wings are on the side. And in the meantime, the face of the kruvim seem to be looking down, because they're looking down to the kaporet. So what's the image here? You have these kruvim that, again, as I suggested a few shiurim ago, perhaps looked like the faces of oxen. Chazal have a different suggestion of faces like little children. In any case, they don't have a full body, and they have wings. And there are three things going on. They've got wings that are covering the kaporet. They are looking at each other, and they are also looking down at the kaporet. And there seems to be a very powerful symbolism, obviously, in what's going on with the kruvim. That on the one hand, the kruvim seem to be emblematic of, as we hear about the malachim, standing, especially in Yeshayahu Vav, standing in front of Hashem with their wings spread and as they're about to praise Hashem. That's one piece of the puzzle. The second is, p'nehem ish al achiv, that they're facing each other. So there's a certain component of fraternity and connectiveness between the two, separated, because they're on the two edges of the Kaporet, and yet they're looking at each other, and that cohesiveness, that friendship, that teamwork, is what creates the sacred space from where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be speaking to them. And yet, they're facing the Kaporet, because what's the Kaporet? The Kaporet is what is covering up the Edut. Eventually, we'll be covering up the Edut. And this triangular symbolism, as it were, of reaching heavenwards, of facing each other in a sense of unity, and of keeping the focus, the visual focus, on Torah and on the Brit, seems to be what creates this sacred space. And translating that into Avodat Hashem, into our own worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is that we, of course, need to keep our hearts guided towards heaven. We have to keep our intentions towards God and towards sanctity. But it always must be done in a way in which we are Pneihem Ish al Achiv. We're doing it with fraternity and with brotherhood and with friendship towards each other and support towards each other, so that the wings should not carry us so far away that we can't face each other anymore. And all of this must be done while we continue to keep our eyes on the Torah, our eyes on the Brit, which of course will guide us through all of that. We continue in the next thing that we hear that Bezalel built in Pasuk Yod, Vayaset HaShulchan Atzei Shittim. So he made the Shulchan again of acacia wood, Amatayim Orkov Amar Rechbo V'Amar V'Chetzi Komato. Again, two amot long, one amah wide, so it's oblong, it's rectangular, and one amah and a half tall. It's not very high off the ground. Vayitzaf Oto Zahav Tahor. He plates it with pure gold. And again, like the Aron, and we pointed out in our podcast on Truma, how much the Shulchan is something of a weaker extension of the Aron, they made a gold crown around it. There's a frame that's one tefach that goes around it. And that miskeret, that frame, also has a gold crown around it. And again, he puts on, solders on, four golden rings, and they're on the four corners that are at the four legs of the Shulchan. And the tabaot are aligned with the frame that's around it. And what are the tabaot? Batim labadim laseit et haShulchan. They are housings for the staves, for the purpose of carrying the Shulchan. And now he makes the staves again out of acacia wood, plates them with gold, and the purpose is to carry the Shulchan. And the assumption here, although we don't hear it, is that he would put the Badim in. Now he did put the Badim in, as we heard a little bit earlier, he put the Badim into the side of the Aron. In Pasuk Hei, we do not hear about him putting the Badim into the side of the Shulchan at this point. So the Badim are ready to go, they're plated, and the purpose is there, but they're not yet in. Vayas et hakelim asher al haShulchan, et ka'arotav, et kapiotav, et menakiotav, v'et haksavot asher yusach bahen, zahav tahor. So all of the kelim that are used for the Shulchan, the bowls that are used, the spoons that are used for the bzachim, the cleansing pieces, all of the kelim that are going to be used for the Shulchan are all made out of Zahav Tahor. And again, everything that is in the Kodesh is going to be from Zahav. Once we move out, then we move, of course, into the bronze area. We'll pause at this point and pick up with the next passage describing Bezalel's work in the next podcast. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.